Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. All right, I'm excited. We're going to hit some timely and relevant stuff today, and we've got a returning guest, and you know what that means. He's very good. Trevor Honeycutt, reporter, Investment News. A lot of great stuff over there at investmentnews.com. And Trevor comes to us as a reporter covering a wide range of wealth management, financial technology, financial markets topics. He's been a freelance reporter, writer, editor, researcher for numerous outlets, including Associated Press, San Francisco Chronicle, Reuters, and he is a tuned-in guy. He's following very closely some of the things unfolding in the markets, and we want to get his perspective. He has a Master's in International Relations from London School of Economics and Political Science. And I'm very pleased to welcome Trevor back to the program. Trevor, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure, and I really appreciate your time. I know you're a busy guy, and so let's just dive right in. Several things that we wanted to get your perspective on, and I know you've written about recently in Investment News. We'll start with the red dragon in the room, China. What to do? Their stock market, of course, going through a significant correction and pullback in recent period here. So what is, in your mind, one of the top things that investors listening to this program should take from that? Should they pause? Should they reevaluate? Or is this a buying opportunity, or depending on your situation, all the above?
You know, it's so hard to answer that question. It's been incredible just to watch the volatility that's happened in the markets, the swings up and down every day. Something different is happening, and it's almost hard to keep a handle on it. The markets over there have gone up tremendously.
Sure.
There was a period of time where I was looking at the yearly statistics, and the markets had gone up on average 150%. Over a year. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, that's come back down significantly. It's still positive for the year. But a lot of that is happening in markets that foreigners can't get access to.
Okay.
And so it's not going to directly impact your, the average investor's portfolio. But what people should be looking at is if there's any blowback on the broader economy. Say for instance, so many Chinese people have invested in the stock markets, and now they've lost, some of them have lost quite a bit of money.
Right.
And so the question is, do they then start to pull back what they're spending in the rest of the economy? And then that could be a serious issue, because China's the second largest economy in the world. They buy a lot of the commodities that are produced around the world. And so then you start to worry about, a country that's been growing really strongly, starting to pull back, and then are there broader implications for the global economy? So that's kind of where investors should be thinking about.
Excellent. That's very good, Trevor. And you know, continuing that point, that ripple effect you're referring to is felt significantly by the developing countries, which many of them are commodities based.
That's right. And so then, if you start to think about a lot of, what we call the emerging markets,
mm-hmm.
And even some developed markets like Australia,
right.
Very dependent on Chinese demand for core commodities.
Mm.
And a lot of these economies have already been hurt by the decline in oil prices and
sure.
energy prices. And so that's a lot of people have been focused on Europe, but then you've also got this other thing that's happening, which is just the question of whether demand for commodities and for other goods is gonna stay strong around the world.
Hmm. Very interesting. And so for the I'll kind of quantify or categorize investors here for a moment, Trevor. If let's say we have someone looking long term, maybe
right.
they've got a 10-year time horizon, and if they've been thinking about or wanting to start to include an equity position with some China exposure, then this may be or could be an opportunity. However, the other side of it is that there could be continued fall off, and this could just be, quote unquote, the tip of the iceberg.
It could be, you know, and there, I definitely see both sides of the argument. You know, some people say that you need to have as broadly diversified a portfolio as possible, meaning you should invest everywhere. You should, which would mean that in terms of a stock portfolio, you'd put 7% of it in China. But then you have other people on the other side of you know, the coin who would say, well, look, you know, you've got all this volatility, you've got all this risk. Should you be putting that much money into that kind of an economy and that kind of a market? And I could see both sides of the argument.
Yeah, and I do this with how I manage money myself, Trevor, that, you know, we do believe strongly in the diversification, but there are places where you certainly can say, look, my portfolio has not had enough exposure to this particular area, and I'll look at this as an opportunity to, you know, to go ahead, and because this market has done nothing but just blast through the stratosphere, and looking at, you know, last couple of years, the Asian markets in particular being the leaders for the last, I think, 2 or 3 years, that, hey, if you were going to get into it again, I think maybe looking at it as an opportunity to say, all right, maybe I've been wanting to do it anyway. There are still some valuation concerns that I'm sure you've noticed that people have about the Chinese stocks. So, you know, they've got a lot to navigate. I did read your investment news article with a lot of interest. And one of the things I know that you spoke to was, this is really a communist, I mean, let's call it what it is. It's a communist government trying to manage free market and capitalist, you know, finances. So that's a really interesting combination. And the question then becomes, can they pull it off?
It's been incredible to watch, honestly. You know, the government there, as you said, you know, a communist government to a large extent, you know, it's called the Communist Party, Chinese Communist Party. And yet they showed an initial willingness to open up their markets more, to let foreigners start to invest in the stock market a little bit more. And now that they've seen, you know, the fact that those markets can go up and down and swing wildly, they've reacted, you know, very strongly, and doing sorts of things that you know, we haven't seen in the United States very often. You know, their central banks are now loaning money to market participants to kind of prevent stocks from losing more money. They have prevented large investors from selling certain stocks.
Yeah.
So it's been incredible to see their response.
I read, and you may have had this in your article, I've read it a couple places, that there was an initiative also where they, you know, you have the communal ownership of property, but out, quote unquote, in the country or the farmlands or where it was a certain region of China that they allowed the individual ownership and then even allowed them to borrow against the home.
That's right. That's absolutely. Absolutely. Mm. And there's been a lot of, you know, one of the things that the government has been trying to do is to get more demand in the economy from consumers, to have them start to spend more and invest more in the stock markets, as opposed to just kind of socking it away, because they think that'll generate more growth. And they're already basically in a soft landing for their economy. So, you know, and now a lot of that borrowing has kind of come back, you know, to hurt a little bit now that the markets have pulled back. And a lot of the money that was going into those markets, again, was by, you know, regular, ordinary people who were borrowing money from brokerages, putting it right into stocks, and now they're hurting a little bit. Although the market came back a little bit today in trading.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're going to have to watch it carefully because it is, I think, probably the takeaway is it certainly is very interesting, in fact, fascinating to watch how this unfolds. And, you know, everybody's got to consider this within the framework of their portfolio. I don't think anybody is suggesting, nor would it be prudent to go plunking down a large chunk in or a disproportionate amount of your portfolio into Chinese stocks because of the pullback. But again, if somebody were looking to get some exposure that they've needed and they've been, you know, 99% U.S. and they've been looking to build a little bit more of a diversified portfolio around the world, that this could be an opportunity. So it'll definitely be interesting to watch.
And the average investor, you know, I think the good thing to keep in perspective is that the average investor is not exposed to the swings that have been happening in Chinese domestic markets.
Right.
And the average investor has very little money in China.
Well put. Well said, Trevor. All right. Well, good. This is good stuff. Trevor Honeycutt, ladies and gentlemen, is our guest today, reporter, Investment News. Lots of great stuff over at investmentnews.com, and we're very glad to have Trevor rejoining us today. We'll do a quick break. We'll come back and get Trevor's weighing in on another troubling spot, which is just south of us in Puerto Rico, and some of what they're facing with some debt issues. So stay right there. We'll be right back.
These are challenging times for investors. The stock market is volatile, with 10% drops a common historical occurrence. Is your financial portfolio prepared for such a correction? What about inflation? What's your plan when that gallon of milk or gallon of gasoline costs $16? And what about interest rates? Did you know that a 10-year bond could drop 10% if interest rates rose just 1%? What's your plan for that? Holland Financial has all the answers to questions like these and practical steps to help you hedge against these negative events. Call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com to schedule your one-on-one meeting with David Holland.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Trevor Honeycutt on the line with me, investment news reporter, and I've been following Trevor's work for quite some time and very much enjoy his writing, and very insightful and timely. And on that point, not to disappoint Trevor, Puerto Rico provides an opportunity to talk about where there is return and yield, there is also risk.
Absolutely. And this has just been another incredible story to watch. It's been a slow-moving debt crisis, I'd say. Mm-hmm. You know, Puerto Rico went into recession back in 2006, I believe, officially. And so they kind of led the rest of the
right.
United States into that horrible recession that we had starting in 2009, I think it officially started. You know, essentially what has happened there is that Puerto Rico has come to the conclusion that they cannot pay the debts that they have that they've taken out, and the problem for U.S. investors is that they are on the hook for some of that. Investors here have been buying Puerto Rican municipal bonds because they get a tax break on them, because Puerto Rico is part of the United States.
Right.
You get favorable tax treatment, and they've paid a nice yield over time. But you know, the governor of Puerto Rico came out very recently and said that he doesn't think the payments are that the municipality, the Commonwealth, can make the payments. And so that's a big problem for investors.
Well, there's a lot here. Going back to the beginning with 2006 and their recession, they led the U.S. with that earlier recession. Is that due largely to a tourist-based industry, or was there something else going on?
Yeah, I think about 17% of their economy is tourism at this point. That actually helps them a lot. You know, really, but really at the core of it is just the economy's not
okay.
It's not growing.
It's
not growing, and people are leaving Puerto Rico. So, you know, again, if you're born there, you're a U.S. citizen, you can leave, and people have been leaving to come to the mainland because it's just a much better economic situation in the rest of the United States.
Is this a classic example of fewer and fewer people there to be part of the tax base to provide and pay for the benefits being conferred to previous generations? In terms, do they have like a pension system or something like that there?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. They have pretty generous benefits. They have a pretty high... they are using the same minimum wage as the rest of the United States, even though the labor prices there are a little bit lower. You know, so a minimum wage there is actually going to go a lot further.
I'm with you,
and so that's sometimes a very hard burden for the employers there to keep up with. So it's a very messy economic situation right now.
Now, I know you wrote about this in your article. Is the current number? It's the debt, total debt they owe. Is it $72 billion?
Something. Yes, it's very close to that.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And when I first saw that number, and it helped me get this in proper perspective, Trevor, I first saw the number of $72 billion, and to be quite candid, I said, that's not as much as I anticipated for this being, quote-unquote, a crisis. Now, and I guess maybe I need to step back and think about how big of an economy. Do you have an idea what how big the economy is of Puerto Rico?
You know, I don't know the GDP offhand, but I do know that the payments on that debt is it is a lot.
Okay.
And the other thing about their economy is that as they've tried to handle this situation, they've assigned certain government revenues to pay certain debts.
Okay.
And so they don't have a lot of control over what they do with the revenue that comes into the government.
I got you.
And so it's become a very bad situation.
Well,
as a percentage of the whole U.S. municipal bond market, it's not huge, and so that's the good thing.
Yeah, the municipal bond market. I know you wrote about this as well. You had pegged that at about $576 billion is a total U.S. municipal bond market. So yeah, or municipal bond funds. So I mean, that's you're right. In comparison, it's not necessarily a huge number.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, you know, I suppose Puerto Rico could, maybe we can give them the IMF's number, have them give them a call.
it's going to be an interesting situation to see them try to work with this because, you know, they can't declare, bankruptcy. They have to deal with this.
No, they can't, can they?
They're going to have to come to an agreement with the people who hold the bonds, which include, you know, a lot of mutual fund managers.
Yeah, and that is an interesting thing. They, as a municipality, they can't. But didn't we have something like that? I want to just make sure we flesh this out a little bit with Detroit, and wasn't it Orange County, where you did have technically a default and or bankruptcy?
That's
right. Can they do that, but they can't do the same?
No, cities and states in the United States, they have a better ability to claim bankruptcy.
Okay, but not Puerto Rico is technically a commonwealth?
That's right.
Okay, all right. Interesting. Well, you know what? You never stop learning, Trevor, and I appreciate your insight into this because it will be interesting to see how it plays out. I know that the folks that hold the bonds, of course, are mutual fund. A lot of it is held institutionally, correct, like Franklin Templeton?
Absolutely. Absolutely. They are one of the biggest creditors for Puerto Rico.
So I imagine they got a phone call from Mr. Franklin or Mr. Templeton, right? And said, we'd like to work something out and get you some easy payment terms or maybe give you a little respite and we'll figure out a way to work through this.
Yes, and they just announced that they would be having a meeting with the governor very soon and shortly to see if they can work something out.
All right. Very good, Trevor. Very good indeed. Well, let's grab a quick break. We'll come right back with Trevor Honeycutt. Next up, we're going to give you an example of why you need to be careful in a couple ways. One, with your investments and not putting too much in any one thing. And also, all the rage, exchange-traded funds. Well, there's been a little problem with F-squared, and we're going to get Trevor's perspective on that subject. Stay right there.
What if in the time it takes you to eat lunch, you could potentially strengthen your financial future? Would you invest 1 hour to plan stronger? Well, if you spend just 1 hour with certified financial planner David Holland, you'll get simple, straightforward advice to help you plan stronger. It's as simple as that. And if you already have a financial plan, isn't it worth an hour to get a second opinion? And there's no cost or obligation to meet with David. All you need to do is simply call 671-PLAN. That's 671-PLAN. Or visit planstronger.com for more information. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
And we are back, and not anonymous is Trevor Honeycutt, and we're glad he's with us, reporter Investment News, investmentnews.com. Great website. I'm on there all the time. And there we found a very interesting article that Trevor had written about F-squared, And F Squared filed for bankruptcy. And so I'll tee it up for you there, Trevor. Tell us a little bit about what's going on. First, if you don't mind, for the listeners, tell them a little bit about what F Squared has done and in terms of what kind of service and what they do. And
sure.
Then we'll talk about the troubles that they got into. They did it the old-fashioned way. They lied.
So what happened was F Squared was a firm that was founded back in 2006. And what they did, what their key value was that they helped investors use exchange-traded funds, ETFs.
Right.
So your listeners may have heard about these products. They are they're new. They're very popular. But they also, just like any other investment, they require somebody to take a look at them and decide what's good, what's bad, when to buy, when to sell. And so that's what this company said it had a tremendous ability to do. And so they became very popular. They managed a strategy that had at one point about $30 billion in assets. The problem is that they said that the strategy had been used to manage people's money for years and years and years, going back to, I think, 2001. But that was not the case. The strategy was much newer than that. It hadn't been used to successfully manage people's money before people started investing. And, the regulators got on them about that.
Amazing. They found fault with that, right? Hey, get them regulators. Well, you know what? Hey, listen, like I said, they made their money the old fashioned way. They made a story up and this is not the first time this kind of thing has happened, but they got really nailed on it, didn't they?
They did. So back in December, they settled with the Securities and Exchange Commission. That's the regulator. They had to pay $35 million. To kind of settle those charges, and their CEO, a man by the name of Howard Present, he left the firm, and he's been fighting the regulator in court. And it seems that those two things are what kind of led to this bankruptcy, because they essentially said in their filings that the legal costs were just too high, for them to stay in business.
Well, and that's probably really the real killer, because, again, I don't want to make a big number sound small. I did that a moment ago, but $35 million in the scheme of things on Wall Street doesn't seem like a lot to kill them, but I think you have nailed it, Trevor. And it's just the ongoing nature of the litigation, and I love the, I think this was your quote, that investors were quote-unquote, or it was one of the let's see. Yeah, you quoted it as saying that the investors had put F Squared in the penalty box.
Oh, yeah.
And I love that, because it's just really, bad behavior. We're going to hold you accountable for that.
That was actually one of their salespeople that said that.
Okay, I really like that. And I said, that's really true. And I think we've seen that other places. And, there is, even though it seems like sometimes that the folks that engage in these shenanigans get away with it, often enough, thankfully, there is some justice that's served. And now the strategies being used by F Squared and what they did with ETFs for investors, I guess those are being picked up by another company, one of their competitors, who's buying their intellectual property, and to continue to offer that to the consumer, the investor.
Exactly. So that's if the bankruptcy court approves it, the strategy and all of that will be taken over. A lot of people do like the strategy and think the performance has been just fine, the real performance.
Right.
And so that, for investors that want that, that will continue to be available to them, most likely.
It reminds me of Wizard of Oz. Never mind that guy behind the curtain over there, the big and almighty Oz. Well, are investors losing out in this deal? I guess that's a question. They were private?
Yes, the company, F Squared Investment Management, is private. Its investors include its former chief investment officer, or chief executive officer, and you would imagine that this is not going to be a great outcome for them.
No, there will be some cost involved, and they will, and in fact, I'm sure there's going to be a case made to bar them from the industry.
You know, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen on with the regulation at this point. I think they believe that with the exception of the former CEO, who is fighting being banned from the industry in court, I think everyone else with the company thinks that they're going to be fine, at least in terms of legal liabilities.
Okay. So the individual investor, I guess this is kind of the final point here, Trevor, individual investor who had money or had purchased ETFs that were part of these strategies, their money was not really held by F Squared. They were providing a service as it related to those investments. So those dollars that investors had put into those ETFs weren't really, subject to their doing something wrong with them. There was just an inducement to use their services based on, a falsehood.
That's exactly right.
Okay. All right. That's good. So, but the lesson for investors, and that's really another key thing I wanted to get to, Trevor, is that the lesson is that you really need to, number one, be careful about going all in any one thing, and because of the risks that can happen. And companies on Wall Street, they do fail.
That's right. That's absolutely right. You have to know where your money is and why it's there.
And if you can't explain it to somebody simply, I think Einstein said, if you can't explain something simply enough, then you don't understand it yourself. All right, Trevor. Well, we're glad you're here to help us understand some of these things that are complicated and or unfolding and, in some cases, strange. So thanks for rejoining us. Trevor Honeycutt, ladies and gentlemen, reporter at Investment News. Website, investmentnews.com. We'll be sure to get in touch with you again and get you back for another one of your great stories. Thank you so much, Trevor.
Thank you.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.